And this is KZSU Stanford, and it's 1 o'clock, and you're in tune to another edition of Shedding Light Now. And I want to let you know that the views or opinions expressed by the host, DJ, or their guests present on KZSU are not that of the Stanford Leland Stanford Junior University or its associates. We thank you for tuning into this KZSU 90.1 FM broadcast. And stay tuned for, once again, another exciting edition of Shedding Lights. Song, you know it's time for another edition of Shedding Lights here at KZSU, and I'm your host Bert, and today joined by the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice here on the peninsula, Mr. Paul George. Way too much stuff going on, Paul. Way too much to talk about. I haven't said a word on these radio airwaves in the last 2 weeks about Haiti. The politicians are going crazy with the money. Amy Goodman reported today that it's being reported throughout the news media that the policies that are getting put in place and left in place are going to lead us to another big bubble and another big crash, and it looks like we're just going to be in this cycle forever. What's going on, Paul? You know more than I do.
Oh, I don't know a thing.
Well, that doesn't help.
Yeah, I'm just going to sit here quietly for the next hour. And
don't do that, Paul.
Leave you hanging. Well, speaking of money, the president sent his budget down to Capitol Hill today.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking a $3.8 trillion U.S. budget.
That's a lot of money.
It's a few bucks. You know, it's
is that the biggest budget ever been?
Yeah, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. The story here, though, is, you know, we've heard the president talking over the last week about a budget freeze. And they are indeed freezing some domestic spending. But the Pentagon budget, as usual, is going up and up and up. Out of the $3.8 trillion, $708 billion is going to the Pentagon. $708 billion just to the Pentagon.
That was another thing reported on Democracy Now! Today, and they took it off from some other news services that, military spending is going up when they're actually talking about cutting domestic spending, which means spending for, like, the people, right?
Yeah, security spending overall, supposedly, is going up over 5% to a total of $719 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And domestic spending, non-security spending, is going down by a little over 1%, a cut of about $5 billion.
So as an activist, Paul, or just an American citizen, why does that concern you?
Well, military spending is not very productive, and especially in the midst of what's now being labeled with capital letters the Great Recession, the biggest economic downturn since the Great Depression of the 30s, it just seems contrary to be increasing all this military spending. Weapons, just weapons procurement for the Pentagon out of that $708 billion is $112 billion just for weapons procurement.
Wow.
You know, $112 billion. And at the same time, most of the economists who are talking about such things say what we really need to get out of this economic crisis is another stimulus package, that the $700 billion stimulus package that was rushed through last year was not enough. It does seem to have had some desired effect, but it could be even greater, and especially with unemployment now at an official 10% and probably a real unemployment rate closer to something like 14 or 16%. A lot of the, you know, $112 billion for weapons could provide a lot of jobs. But there's not going to be another stimulus package because Congress just won't put up with it. But they're going to pass this Pentagon budget. You better believe it. Now, out of that $708 billion, there's $33 billion just for Afghanistan and Pakistan, the carrying on the war there. And that's on top of $130 billion that's already been approved for this year. So we're talking $160 billion for war, $112 billion for weapons procurement. And then you look at the unemployment figures in this country, and people losing their homes, mortgages underwater, and you got to believe our priorities are askew here. That's the way I feel about it.
Now, as a lifelong activist, what's your take on when you see what the government's doing? What's your take on where does that put Barack Obama as far as being that change agent that he said he wanted to be for us?
Well, he's kind of run into a brick wall in terms of trying to change Washington. I think we've seen that. He kind of admitted that in his State of the Union address last week. Let's not underestimate how difficult it is to change Washington. There are some very entrenched powers there. Corporate control of Washington is immense. I forget who it was back in the last fall. One of the senators said the banks own Capitol Hill.
Probably Bernie Sanders.
No, it wasn't a radical leftist like Bernie Sanders.
No.
I think it was Chris Dodd.
Said wow.
They just own Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse given this recent Supreme Court decision that lets corporations spend at will in our elections. Including foreign corporations. And, you know, they don't even have to really spend money in the elections to have influence. All they have to do is threaten to spend money. That's how it works. You know, if a congressperson doesn't want to go along with the program that some corporation wants, they just threaten to throw millions of dollars into their district to unseat them.
So if I'm not mistaken, it almost feels like it's gone from bad to worse. Because we came out of 8 years of Bush, and we thought we were getting a big change and things were going to go, you know, better than they did, and they seem to be getting worse. Maybe it's just with the way I'm seeing it, but what do you see on the horizon that American people could do to try to really make a change?
Well, I think there's got to be a real uproar over the economy, over Wall Street versus Main Street. You know, the next big thing Congress is going to be taking on, I think, is jobs. And the president has proposed something like $30 billion for a jobs program, which...
Wasn't that money that was going to go to the banks so they could loan money to small businesses?
It's some of the money coming back he wants to use. The jobs bill, whatever it's going to be, looks to be that'll be new money from somewhere.
But he's going to give it. I thought I understood him to say he's going to give it to banks, to smaller banks, to loan to small businesses.
That's a separate issue beyond the whatever jobs bill is coming. What he wants to do is take some of the TARP money that's been repaid. It's apparently floating around as a slush fund now that, you know, that they got the TARP stuff approved. And once it's paid back, he's kind of like recycling it. And now that seems like a good idea because the TARP money was supposed to loosen up credit again. I mean, one of the problems of the recession was this credit freeze. And every business, you know, small or large, needs rotating credit for inventory, and they borrow it, and they buy their inventory, sell the inventory, pay back the loan, take out their profit.
What happened?
But the banks no longer started trusting each other or their customers. There was a panic in the financial system, and credit froze. And even though the TARP funds, you know, bailed out the bad assets that these super banks had, they didn't start lending again. So what Obama is proposing on this credit side is to take some of that repaid TARP money and transfer it to community banks who will loan it out to local businesses. And you know, that will help with hiring and that will help move us back out. I find it kind of interesting that he made this announcement just on the heels of Arianna Huffington and some others launching a campaign called Move Your Money. And she was proposing that, you know, take your money out of Bank of America, take your money out of Chase, take it out of Citibank, and put it in a local community bank or a credit union.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Obama's doing with this, is moving the money. So, you know, that's a good thing. The jobs bill, according to the economists that I've been reading, we don't know what it's going to look like yet, but Congress is not going to pony up a whole lot of money for jobs. Paul Krugman yesterday on the Sunday Talking Heads show, you know, said that what's being proposed will create or save something like 200,000 jobs. Well, we need 7 million jobs. So that's only a drop in the bucket. It's not going to help much. And, you know, this is the problem with the Republicans, with their radical get government out of everything. This is really getting down to basic ideological discussion here. You know, most modern economists will say the government has a key role to play in our economy and has to stimulate the economy. It's the lender of last resort when we get into a thing like this great recession. The Republicans are dead set against government getting into it at all. They want to say that the market will correct itself. Everything this deep belief in the market. But when you look at the history of the last 25 years, the government has bailed out the markets innumerable times. Innumerable times. There is no such thing as a self-correcting market or a free market. And to believe in that and just think everything's going to right itself is insane. And so you have that contrasted with the Republicans are going to be very happy to go along with the $708 billion for the Pentagon
mm-hmm.
because, you know, that weapons procurement figure that I gave you, $112 billion, you know, that goes out to everybody's different districts. Everybody's got a finger in the defense pie. And so these things get passed without really thinking about it. So there's not going to be any controversy over an increasing Pentagon budget. They'll probably be falling all over themselves to see, you know, who can increase it the most. And you contrast that with the economic suffering that's going on in this country, and you've got a recipe for a popular uprising, really. People are angry over the economy, and Going back to your question, what can we do? I think that anger is going to show up. And, you know, as always, people need to be talking to Congress and telling them, you know, what they want. The budget being proposed today is a good place to start. You know?
Now, what relationship, or not so much relationship, but you're a lifelong activist. You've been director of Peninsula Peace and Justice. You guys are fighting against the war. You're out there with the signs, and you're marching, and you guys do all that. Now you have the teabagger movement. And you know, we all laugh at that, but these people are truly angry. They're Americans.
Yeah.
Some are misinformed. Some aren't. Some are being misguided. A lot of them are kind of disillusioned with the whole new teabag movement because they found out they've been kind of misled, and there's corporations behind that that are kind of misleading them. So you have these kind of two disparate movements, right? The activists that were out there for the last many years fighting against war and social injustice and all that. Then you have this teabagger movement. Is there a way to bring those two together and get that anger all together and make it move in one direction? Or do you have to stay away from that? Do those two have to stay separate? Because there is two separate movements going on here, right?
Well, there is, and you know,
both fueled by the same anger, though.
Yeah, pretty much. I would say, you know, on something like economic policy, that there should be a lot of overlap. But unfortunately, the teabagger movement, people are actually arguing against their own
self-interest. Isn't that strange?
And you know, they've, like you said, with corporate involvement behind the scenes. I mean, this is real astroturf grassroots.
Now, explain that, because we hear that in the media a lot, and a lot of times it doesn't get explained. What is an astroturf movement? What does that mean?
It's, you know, corporate money behind a grassroots movement isn't really a grassroots movement.
So it's a corporation putting money down but trying to make it look like grassroots.
Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the Massachusetts senatorial election where the Democrats lost Ted Kennedy's seat to this Republican Scott Brown.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of corporate money in there. A lot came in through a group called Freedom Works, which is headed up by Dick Armey, former Republican powerhouse in Congress.
What's so funny is everybody calls him that, but why don't they call him what he is now? He's a lobbyist, right?
Well, yeah.
Forget he's a former politician. Let's see what he is now. He's a big fat. He was on TV Saturday morning before I came down to do my radio show here, and they said, Dick Armey, former whatever he was of the Senate or Congress.
Uh-huh.
But I thought, why don't you put his label up now, what he is now? He's a super lobbyist that used his government connections. He did the real revolving door, right? He left government, kept all his connections, and now he's who's he lobbying for? The healthcare industry? Insurance industry?
I don't know for sure.
Yeah, one of them, right?
Yeah, obviously. That reminds me, one of my all-time favorite politician statements came from Dick Armey many years ago. I think it was during the Clinton administration. And they were arguing over, there were two congresspeople on, and they were arguing over the middle class tax cuts that were being proposed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were arguing over what constituted the middle class.
Oh.
If you make $1 million more a year, $500,000 or more a year, you know, what makes you middle class?
Yeah.
And in the midst of this debate back and forth, I forget who the Democrat was, Dick Armey just suddenly kind of like pulled his horse up short and said, "But of course, America is a classless society."
Yeah, sure. Right.
And then they went back to arguing what constitutes the middle class. That would be an interesting argument to hear these days, because there's the middle class is rapidly disappearing.
Sure.
But I mentioned that because it is important. There is growing class consciousness as a result of the Wall Street bailouts and the slogans of Main Street before Wall Street. People are really angry that the wealthy and the elites have been bailed out, that they're doing fine, they're not hurt, they're getting their big bonuses on Wall Street.
But yet they vote against their own interests more times than none, right?
Yeah.
Especially in the heartland of this country. And I'm not knocking anybody in the middle of the country. I'm just saying, you, this teabagger movement was so stark in the way that they're marching saying, please, you know. It's totally against their own. We're talking to Paul George, director of Peninsula Peace and Justice. And we want to thank the producer of this show, Blue. She got Paul's Wi-Fi connection up, which means they can people can email questions into you. Right, Paul?
That's right. Email me at paul@peaceandjustice.org, and we'll see if we can get some questions and comments on the air here.
That's paul@peaceandjustice.org. Why don't we take a brief musical break, and we're going to come right back and shift gears. There's too much to talk about here, and we're going to talk about it. This is Shedding Light on KZSU Stanford. We'll be right back. Okay, so as we're speaking now, I'm here with Paul George today, and you can email him, paul@peaceandjustice.org, right, Paul?
Right.
And, Paul, Haiti. Now, you have a TV show once a month,
right.
And the next show is going to be tomorrow night, right?
Right.
And it's going to be about Haiti, right?
It's going to be about Haiti. We have a couple of Haiti solidarity activists who are going to be on. People who have made many trips down to Haiti, both on human rights delegations and taking material aid, helping set up computers and things like that in Haiti. And I just found out this morning that we're also going to be joined by Walter Riley, who's...
Ooh, Boots's dad.
Boots's dad, yeah.
Boots of the coup.
Yeah, I should just say Boots's dad is going to be on. Walter and his family were actually in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince, when the earthquake hit. And so he's going to have some eyewitness reports. And Walter is also the head of the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, HERF.
And that's a serious grassroots organization that's doing real work on the ground there, right?
That's right. You know, it's really important. I would encourage people to continue donating money to the different groups that are doing work in Haiti. But really think about where your money is going.
Well, where can they find out where the real grassroots organizations are doing the real work? There's got to be a website somewhere.
Right.
Who's giving the real money up? Who's doing the real work?
Well, there's the group that I'm would recommend personally is Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, HERF.
Okay.
And the donation links can be found at HaitiAction.net.
Okay.
www.HaitiAction.net.
Is there a larger site where they might have more organizations, say, compiled on one site?
We had it on our website for a while. We had a list of about 20 different organizations.
What happened?
It just, you know, the homepage keeps changing. So maybe I should get that back up there.
Please do.
'Cause, you know, there's good groups like Doctors Without Borders.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen their work firsthand in Central America back in the 80s and early 90s when I did a lot of traveling to Central America. In El Salvador, they were known as Doctors Without Brakes because they were known as to drive a little fast.
Okay.
But they do great work.
Also, we've been hearing some stuff too, but I didn't mean to interrupt, but we heard that some American missionaries, and we don't know the total end of this story, but we heard some American Baptist missionaries got arrested over the weekend.
Yeah.
They had 33 children with them, and it was the Haitians that arrested them. Haitian military arrested them because apparently it wasn't too kosher about what they had going on with these kids. Some of these kids said they had been duped, said they were being told they were going to get taken to summer camp. But these missionaries had said, these American missionaries had said, no, they're taking to be adopted. And that, which opens up a whole nother door of, is there, you know, people going down to Haiti to get involved in human trafficking, especially in children? That's got to be a major problem, right, that somebody needs to be looking out for.
Yeah, the problem with either orphan children or just separated children right
mm-hmm.
now is very serious. And, you know, we don't know yet what the full story of this Baptist group is.
What's really troubling is it was the Haitian army and the Haitian government is pretty, you know, they're busy. I mean, you know, they're strapped. We don't hear about a lot of work they're doing. The American military is in control down there, right? They control the airport. They pretty much got the weapons, and they're kind of in charge of security, as we've been told. And I wonder why it wasn't the American military that caught these people and arrested them. It was the Haitian military, you know, the Haitian police or military.
Yeah, well, this was at a border crossing, apparently some distance from Port-au-Prince. They,
mm-hmm.
they were trying to cross over to the Dominican Republic.
Instead of flying out of the airport.
Which shares the island with Haiti. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's two countries on the island of, it used to be known as Hispaniola. And so this Baptist group was, you know, crossing a remote border, trying to get into Dominican Republic. How they rounded up 33 kids without talking to any officials and what their plans were, none of that is clear yet. I mean, they're saying they were just trying to help, but I don't think they clearly thought this through. And this is. Another reason why it's really important to support the Haitian grassroots organizations, because they're the ones that are going to have to be empowered as we move into the rebuilding phase. You know, the emergency relief is finally starting to work. You know, food and water is starting to flow in there.
Is it?
Yeah. They're starting to get it straightened out. It's,
Well, we've been hearing a lot of reports that there's a ton of aid at the airport.
A lot locked up at the airport. There's no doubt that there are substantial problems with this.
Well, a lot of outlying villages. Now, Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! Went down the first week
uh-huh.
after the earthquake, and she purposely went out to the outlying villages outside of Port-au-Prince and found out there was no aid getting to these people whatsoever. And this morning on Democracy Now!, Angelique Comet, who might still be down there, or maybe this was a report she did a couple of days ago, was in another outlying village, and they haven't gotten any aid at all. No water, no food. They're not, you know, the lady was living in a tent with her kids, but nobody had touched them. And there's a big concern that there's a bottleneck at the airport. And I did hear Anderson Cooper from CNN saying there was a policy by the American military that if you're going to take aid out of the airport, you had to have a security detail with you. And if you couldn't find a security detail, you couldn't take any aid out. And that might be a way that the aid is getting blockaded and not getting out to where it needs to go.
Yeah, this whole issue of countryside versus the city
mm-hmm.
is going to be a problem for a while. One of the reasons that the earthquake had such a toll in Port-au-Prince was simply the fact that so many people were living there in, you know, shantytown conditions. And these people were living there as a direct result of U.S. economic policy over the last 20, 25 years, which encouraged Haiti to basically abandon its agriculture. Haiti used to feed itself through its own agriculture.
What do you mean the U.S. policy forced it to do that? What happened?
Well, by structuring loans and encouraging certain economic development, they were trying to convince Haiti to become basically an offshore sweatshop, and they were encouraging manufacturing for export. And they were sweatshops, basically. Disney made clothes down there. Major League Baseball, their baseballs are made in Haiti, have been for many, many years.
Hmm.
But a lot of clothing manufacturers. So support for agriculture declined. People moved to the city to get these manufacturing jobs. There weren't enough of them. And so then you ended up
with a lot of people stuck in the city.
With a lot of people stuck in the city. And in the meantime, the infrastructure in these outlying towns fell apart, you know. And now you have a migration out of the city, people who can get out trying to find family and stuff out in the countryside. And
there's nothing out there for them when they get there, right?
No, there wasn't enough support for the people who were already living there, let alone the hundreds of thousands who are migrating back now.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the how important it is to support, you know, Haitian grassroots groups, this is an opportunity actually to kind of re-kickstart Haiti's agriculture.
You think that's going to happen, though?
If the right voices get heard and direct the aid. I heard Dr. Paul Farmer on the radio last week, and he was talking about the need to get people out in the countryside seed and fertilizer and you know, immediately, the planting season is coming up in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And get the stuff planted and then start building on that basis, getting irrigation and, you know, more modern farming techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Paul Farmer is the kind of guy who really knows Haiti. His organization, Partners in Health, has been in Haiti for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's advising the United Nations, and so we hope that you know, voices like that will get heard, listened to, and followed.
Just backing up a little bit, you said U.S. policy caused Haiti to get away from its grassroots and able to feed itself. Why would the U.S. policy be that way towards a little country like that? Why would a big country like the U.S. care enough to want to help destroy a little country like that, a little half a island? It's not even half. It's about a third when you look at the map.
Mm-hmm.
Why is U.S. policy so bent on the destruction of Haiti? Or it just seems that way.
Short answer, cheap labor.
That's it?
Cheap labor.
Does history have anything to do with it?
That's what you know, Haiti now... That's their export.
Right.
That's their major product.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason, that would be a good reason to destroy the economy so you get that cheap labor. But was there anything in the history of Haiti that would cause United States policy for the last 150 years to be hell-bent against it?
Well, obviously, you're referring to
I'm leading you somewhere, Paul.
Americans, yeah, you're tossing
a lot of
softballs.
Americans don't know about
a lot
the
of
slave
Americans
revolt.
Don't know about the long history between the United States and Haiti. They don't know that Haiti was the first black republic in the world.
How was that?
When the slaves rebelled against the French occupiers. Haiti was one of France's most productive colonies, but it was based on a really brutal system of slavery.
So what happened?
Well, the slaves finally rose up and defeated Napoleon's armies and became a free and independent republic.
You know, and that story in itself deserves at least a large Hollywood movie, if not a docudrama, if not a big book. And Toussaint Louverture was a slave who was actually taught how to read, write, and he was actually learned in, he was actually taught in military tactics and in weapons. And he was able to raise up a slave army. It wasn't just that, you know, a bunch of slaves revolted one day and beat Napoleon's army twice.
Right.
Toussaint Louverture had to be one of the most brilliant tacticians in military tactics that ever came along, because he did beat Napoleon twice. Napoleon got defeated, came back, sold the United States, the Louisiana Purchase, so he could get enough money to go back and fight him again. And Toussaint Louverture and his slave army beat Napoleon for the second time. And then it was after that that American policy embraced the French and didn't embrace this new, they became a republic, like you said. They became their own, the first ever formerly slave colony turned into a free republic, and said, now we're free, we are us. You know, and the United States, we're all about freedom and democracy. Why didn't the United States embrace that new found? Because we were formed on revolution, right?
Yeah, but the United States also was still relying on slavery as its economic engine, and the last thing they wanted to see at the time was the inspiration of a slave revolt succeeding and creating a free republic. It wasn't until and this was in
that revolt was in about 1804, right? The early 1800s.
Yeah, early
1800s. They became a republic around 1804.
And it wasn't until Abraham Lincoln that the United States even diplomatically recognized Haiti.
The 1860s. But even then, by the early 1900s, 19, something like that, the Marines and the United States Marines invaded Haiti.
Occupied them for 19 years, 1915 to 1934, I think it was.
So that pretty much told where American policy was going to be for the rest of, well,
and,
at least,
and then,
up
of
now.
Course, you know, the U.S. Was happy to support the Duvalier dictatorships, Papa Doc and Baby Doc. And that's, in fact, when some of this economic policy began, was under Baby Doc Duvalier, when was encouraged to increase manufacturing. And then U.S. food imports helped play a role in undermining Haiti's agriculture.
They used to grow all their own, not just food, but I mean, apparently they had one of the heavy-dutiest rice-growing regions in the Caribbean, right?
That's right, but cheap rice from the United States
undermined that and destroyed their rice crop.
Yeah, so, you know,
so knowing all this, you think it was the smartest idea for the current administration, not that I would blame the president for this, but do you think it was the smartest idea for the current administration to allow the American military to go back down there and militarize the situation?
You know, I would have to defer to the Haitians on this one.
How do they feel about it? Have we heard from them?
They, you know, what I've been reading is that they're okay with it in the emergency situation, but they are really concerned about an ongoing occupation.
Yeah.
And that's, that, you know, as citizens here, we need to be concerned about that.
Apparently France and some other countries have said this too, huh? They've been a little concerned about American military coming in and taking over?
One thing you have to keep in mind is Haiti has already been under military occupation under the flag of the United Nations for the past many years.
Mm-hmm.
It's Brazilian soldiers wearing UN helmets who are patrolling Cité Soleil in the capital. That's the big slum in the capital.
Mm-hmm.
And patrolling the streets of Port-au-Prince. And it's been a pretty brutal occupation. I mean, the Haitian activists have wanted an end to this UN occupation for a long time. So you now have a situation where, you know, officially that's still going on. You have whatever it is, 10,000 U.S. troops in there.
Why didn't the U.N. take over the airport and become the traffic cop, for lack of a better word? How is it that the American military just jumped and ended up as the boss down there?
Well,
with their history of
part of it is, I guess, they got there first.
Oh,
America carries a very big stick.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
And it doesn't walk softly either. But, you know, obviously, there was some need for security in a situation like this.
Yeah, and the UN was already there, right? Like you said, they were already patrolling Cirque
du
Soleil.
Right. You know, how it worked out that the U.S. Took control of the airport. There was some damage to the airport. It had to...
needed to
brought up and running, and you know, I guess the U.S. had the technology to do that.
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers.
But you know, I sure would like to see this this entire effort more under the United Nations and a little less of the U.S. stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
you
tomorrow
know,
night,
I say that with concern about the ongoing United Nations occupation of Haiti.
Yeah.
And what it has meant.
It's troublesome.
And, you know, this is, there's an opportunity here for things to go right in Haiti, but there's also a lot of danger that the rest of the world, the United States in particular, will use this as an opportunity to really kind of lock in the vision that they want. You know, when Jean-Bertrand Aristide was president, he resisted a lot of this pressure from the United States.
And that's probably why he got shipped out.
And the IMF and the World Bank. Yeah, it's no doubt why he got shipped out.
For sure. And also the report of that there are sketchy reports that there might be as many as more than 5,000 people dying a day from, say, broken legs that didn't get taken care of,
right,
in the outlying areas. It could be as many as thousands of people every day dying by treatable wounds because they're not getting the aid they need. We don't know now for sure. Well, we might never know. Those people could die and just get buried and just get forgotten. We don't know. But your show tomorrow night here in the Peninsula Media Center with Walter Riley, that should be kind of informative and help people get some real information they can use, right?
Yeah, and we'll go over a lot of this history, especially the U.S. role in Haiti, and where the relief efforts are needed, and really taking a look to the future and how the rebuilding of Haiti, what the ideal is and what might actually happen and where we need to put our political pressure.
Why don't you let people know again they can watch that show tomorrow?
That's they can first of all come to the studio. We have a live studio audience, and a good part of the program is discussion and question and answer with the audience.
Where's the studio?
The studio is the Community Media Center, and it's at 900 San Antonio Road in Palo Alto. That's right down near 101. It's just beyond Charleston Road, 900 San Antonio Road. The program is on 7 to 8 p.m., so you should get there a little before 7 because mm-hmm. we start promptly at 7 because we're live on TV.
Can local people watch it on TV?
And people can watch it on TV on cable channel 27 in the Mid-Peninsula area.
Mm-hmm.
And the Media Center also streams their programming live on the internet. So
would people pick that up?
That's at midpenmedia.org. That's midpenmedia.org. And just find their live streaming and click on channel 27. They have four channels at the Media Center.
So that's 7 to 8 p.m.
Pacific Standard Time.
There you go. Got me. Let's take a quick musical break. We're here with Paul George today. We're going to be right back and do a little wrap-up, and stay tuned. Back with you now. This is another edition of Shedding Light, heard every Monday here at KZSU 90.1 FM Stanford Radio from 1 to 2 Pacific Standard Time. We're on the antenna at 90.1 FM, and we're streaming live at kzsu.stanford.edu. I'm here with the Director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, Paul George. And Paul, we were just talking off mic, and there's something else you have going about the Haiti relief. You guys are going to do a benefit.
Yeah, I don't have all the details yet. Some of it has just started to come together this morning, but we are going to do a benefit concert for Haiti on Friday, February 26th. One of the pieces that's missing is a venue, but I've got inquiries out to a couple of local churches right now, and hopefully somebody will come through with a nice hall that they'll give us for free.
If there's somebody listening right now that has a nice hall, how could they get in touch with you to let you know they do?
Well, they can call me at the Peace and Justice Center, which is area code 650-326-8837. It's 326-8837, or email me at paul@peaceandjustice.org. And one of the featured performers, I got to get a drink of water here.
Okay. Paul George is Director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, and one of the featured performers is going to be a Haitian band you were mentioning?
Haitian singer and guitarist by the name of Rosemond Jolissant. And he's a young kid. I think he's like 18 years old, and he just won last year Haiti's equivalent of like American Idol. So he's really well known in Haiti, and he's coming up to do a series of benefit concerts. Excuse me. I'm on the tail end of a cold. I thought I was better this morning, but I'm starting to lose my voice a little bit.
So it's Friday, February 26th.
Friday.
Somewhere around here, around the mid-peninsula.
Right.
And you're still kind of looking for a venue, too, if anybody can help with finding a venue that would hold, what, at least a couple hundred people, right?
Yeah, we would hope so.
And maybe a church hall or something
right,
like that.
And so try to get some other local performers, but it's really nice to have a Haitian star coming up.
Well, KZSU can possibly help with that. Before you leave today, we can write up a little public service announcement, and it can be announced on the air, and we can guide them right to you at the Peninsula Peace and Justice website. And any concerned performers that want to help out.
Sure.
Because the longer the thing goes on, the more money might be raised, right? Yeah,
that's right. Let's do a little Woodstock.
Yeah, if you got 10 bands, what the heck, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this is going to be a benefit for two organizations, the grassroots groups like I was talking about. One is, again, the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. And again, that's at HaitiAction.net. And the other is a group called Soil. And this is an organization. Soil stands for Sustainable Organic Integrated Livelihoods. And this is a group that was started actually by a Stanford student who studied biology while she was here at Stanford. And when she graduated, she went to Haiti and set up this group. Nicholas Kristof, the columnist for the New York Times, went and visited her project in Haiti and recommended that, and his end of the year column is a good source for donations and a very reliable grassroots organization.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little Stanford connection there as well.
That's great. We the hour before this, we were talking about Stanford doing a lot of work like that around the world. Well, doing work here that affects all kinds of people around the world, and coming up with not just commercial products, but ways of dealing with unforeseen situations.
Yeah, this soil project is really interesting, and Sasha Kramer, the Stanford student, came up with this idea while she was here studying at Stanford. And basically, it's organic latrines that create fertilizer that's fabulous fertilizer, talking about trying to rebuild Haiti's agricultural industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what they do. You know, it doesn't sound like a really exciting project.
It does.
But it's
something we need
really
up here.
Really essential. Yeah.
I mean, hey, look. You know, the pesticides are killing this country, right?
Yeah.
If we could come up with fertilizers or you know, chemical fertilizers are responsible for a lot of damage to our environment.
That's right.
If we could come up with a natural way of doing that, that could change a lot. Maybe she'll bring it back home, too. Does she commute back and forth, or is she based down in Haiti?
She's based down in Haiti. She was there during the earthquake, but she was out in the countryside. So
she didn't get hurt or anything.
No, but she loaded up their trucks and headed right to Port-au-Prince.
Maybe next time you come on, we could get in touch with her.
Yeah, we can give that a try. You know, you've mentioned Amy Goodman a couple of times. She had Sasha on one morning last week or
all
two
right.
weeks ago.
I missed that one. I'm sorry I did. That would have been powerful for sure.
So again, that's Friday, February 26th, the benefit concert for Haiti. And we'll just get word to Bird when we have a location. But mark your calendars now, if you would. This is too important to not respond to.
Mm-hmm.
Haiti needs a lot of help politically and economically. And
definitely.
We're going to keep talking about that.
Paul George, our guest for this hour, basically coming down to a wind-up here. What else we got, Paul?
What else do we have? I don't know.
Well, it's a 360-degree storm around us, and we're talking politics here, we're talking Haiti, we're talking the wars, and what are you guys talking about at Peninsula Peace and Justice these days?
Well, obviously, trying to get us out of Afghanistan is going to stay at the top of our agenda. We're going to be looking to our local congresspeople not to be voting the funds. There's going to be a $33 billion supplemental funding request coming down from the White House, and we're going to be watching carefully, encouraging people not to vote for that. Recently, back when the policy was still being debated and we were waiting for Obama's answer, what he was going to do in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
A cable from the U.S. ambassador there, Eikenberry, was leaked. And he strongly opposed the escalation in Afghanistan. And recently, in the past week, more cables have been released. And we need to make sure our congresspeople are reading these leaked cables, because he makes a very strong case that the Afghanistan government is just absolutely corrupt. There's no way we can work with them, and that Ambassador Eikenberry is basically predicting that the escalation will be a wreck. So we're going to be staying on that. And then, the economic crisis. Economic justice is one of the things that's always been on our agenda. And we're going to be watching carefully what happens in Congress and be reminding our congresspeople and senators that it's really time to pay attention to Main Street. Wall Street has gotten their bailout. We want Main Street to get its bailout now, and economic justice for the other 99% of the people in this country.
And so tomorrow's the big, not the big show, tomorrow you have the monthly TV show with Walter Riley.
Right.
The Haitian activist. He's not Haitian, but he's a lawyer he's an activist lawyer here in the Bay Area.
Right.
And him and his wife were in Haiti when the earthquake happened.
Yes.
And they, I heard his wife on KPFA.
Oh, did you?
On the morning show, and just after they got back, and she was just giving a blow-by-blow description of what happened to them. And they didn't get hit by any debris, but they were definitely, you know, like in the vicinity, and then they, you know, had to deal with all the ramifications.
Right.
And then try to get out, too. They tried to help as much as they could.
Yeah.
Is Walter's wife coming with him tomorrow?
I don't think so. I just got this as a phone message on my way over, so I've only heard the voicemail confirming that Walter is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter is a longtime activist in the Bay Area and longtime Haiti solidarity activist in addition to many other interests.
Perfect guy to have on the ground, then. Perfect guy to have on your show tomorrow.
Yeah, I've known Walter for many years through the work of the mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. So he's been a big backer of that. So we're looking forward to having him down. And then Seth Donnelly, Los Altos High School teacher, who has been to Haiti I don't know how many times, helping set up computers and things. Longtime Haiti solidarity activist will be joining us as well. Over the weekend, Seth's students at Los Altos High held their own benefit concert for Haiti.
Oh.
So I haven't had a chance to talk to Seth yet to see how that went, but he's a fantastic teacher and a great activist. So between the two of them, I'm looking forward to really good program. Again, that's tomorrow evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Community Media Center, 900 San Antonio Road, or you can watch it on TV, Channel 27 on Mid-Peninsula Cable, or you can watch it live on the internet at midpenmedia.org, midpenmedia.org. Look for Channel 27. Click the link, and you can watch it online.
And Peninsula Peace and Justice is going to have a benefit concert of their own for the Haitian Relief Fund. That's on February 26th, Friday night, right?
That's right.
You haven't got a venue yet, but you're going to get a venue somewhere in the Mid-Peninsula. If anybody knows of a venue, or if any performers out there, or if you know of performers that'd be willing to help out with a performance, or volunteers too, right?
Right.
They could just email you, Paul?
Yep, paul@peaceandjustice.org. Be glad to have it. And by the way, you know, I think the last time I was on, we were talking about Robert Fisk coming in February, and I just want to make the announcement that that's had to be postponed. It should end up being good. Bob Fisk had to postpone his February trip because he's going to cover the elections in Iraq, which take place in early March, and he had to get there the last week of February. But he has solemnly vowed that he will be back in September. So we don't have a new date for that other than it's the last week of September. So I just wanted to let people know that we have had to postpone the Robert Fisk appearance, but he will be coming back to Palo Alto in September.
Sounds good. Paul, we're pretty much out of time for today, but I want to definitely have you back next month. I'm going to try to have you on the first part of every month, and people can catch the TV show tomorrow. They can get on your website and see what else is going on, and they can participate in this benefit concert you're going to be throwing on the 26th.
Right. Yeah, I would really encourage people to kind of make our website, peaceandjustice.org, part of their regular daily routine. We post an article of the day on there, plus about another half dozen articles that are really good viewpoints, important information that's not getting covered in the mainstream media. So there's new stuff on there every day. We currently have over 11,000 articles archived on the website that you can go and search. So if you want to learn about Haiti's history, for example, just go to peaceandjustice.org.
Mm-hmm. Have you archived your TV shows too?
Yeah, all the videos that we produce are online. So it's not only the TV show, but we routinely videotape all of our speakers.
This is a lot of hours of viewing, right?
Yeah. Oh, there's a ton of video on there. I'm getting ready to upload the video of Amy Goodman's most recent appearance.
All right.
Back in November. Really good talk.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll find all kinds of videos on there, not only of our monthly TV show, but all the speakers that come through. And we've had a bunch of them. Noam Chomsky will be going up on the site soon.
Oh, very cool.
Video of that.
So. That's good. Paul, I want to wish you all the best. You keep up the good work, and let's stay in touch, and let us know here at KZSU whatever we can help with. And I know we can do something. And in the meantime, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. This is KZSU Stanford.